ladies and gentlemen. Okay, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on Republic Broadcasting Network, one day a week, ladies and gentlemen, on the Sunday, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, and of course on the other side of the world here in New Zealand. We're actually broadcasting live from the future, making it Monday on 11 a.m. And thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in and joining us live on the chat rooms in the broadcast studio with the Facebook Live, Twitch Live, and YouTube Live. You can go to vinnieeastwood.com in order to see the links for these other social networking sites that we're broadcasting out the show. So today, the topic of the show, we're going to have Billy TK on. There seems to be some difficulty connecting them, but luckily we have a great crew here at RBN, and they will get him eventually, assuming he can be got. But anyway, in the meantime, would just like to get us live, right, and stay alive. There is a lot of terrible things in this world that are very, very scary, and the problem with facing these is that you often lose your sense of humour. So it is incredibly important to retain that sense of humour, lest you go friggin' nuts. This was the original byline of the show, in point of fact. So we appear to have somebody on the in the background there. Have we got Billy in the chat room here?
Here,
yeah, we do.
He's here.
Oh my goodness. Well, in that case, as they say in Israel, without further ado, we're going to come to my wonderful guest, Billy Itikaika. Now, let me see. Billy, go ahead, mate.
Yes, good morning. Kia ora, everybody. Good to be here. Good to be with you, Vinny. Good to be with RBN as well. And it is a beautiful day up here in the far north of New Zealand. We've had unbelievable amounts of rain over the last few days, and we've woken up to a glorious blue sky that doesn't have any geoengineering streaking across it, which is a, which is always a good place to start. And so I am pleased to say I'm going to do this fun interview, and then I'm going to be jumping on my tractor and doing some farm work.
Well, that sounds attractive. And there's a big thing to talk about here is that our trial is going to be concluding on the 16th of December from last we spoke. So the real question that I think people need to kind of be asking is, why are Billy TK and Vinnie actually before the courts? What did they do? You know, did they do anything wrong? Did they harm anybody? Did they damage any of their personal property? And if the answer is no, you should just let them go. But of course, this thing's been such a big rigmarole, hasn't it? And my concern is that, of course, there's going to be some kind of a chilling effect. You know, people be unwilling to stand up and do the right thing, or even people who previously did stand up and do the right thing and got punished so harshly that they just don't do the right thing anymore because they can't, you know, bring themselves to it. This is what we're really dealing with in a broad context with the Truth Movement of New Zealand and the recent sort of abolition of freedom of speech, the abolition of freedom of assembly, which is what we're ostensibly being charged with. In August 18th, 2021, ladies and gentlemen, Billy TK and myself were at a protest, and it was a peaceful protest, and we both got arrested by huge amounts of cops and stuff like that, and we got held for 28 hours, and we couldn't, you know, access our phones for over 9 months. And the bail conditions that we were head on had no access to the internet, like in its entirety, and couldn't leave our homes. Got bail checks of people turning up all the time at odd hours of the day and night to check that we're still home. It was an absolutely brutal, savage thing. And of course, it's not something that you can really quantify unless you've really been through it. Now, I've interviewed many, many traumatized people on this show, but I didn't get it. Now I do. Now I know why you don't allow governments to ride roughshod over people's rights and freedoms, because it's just too dangerous, because the consequences are too great on ordinary and many other kinds of people. So anyway, with that being said, Billy TK, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Thank you so much for being with us.
No, it's good to be with you, Vinny. And yes, this Friday the 16th, you and I will be both before the magistrate again, and we will find out whether we are indeed mean, horrible, terrible, nasty criminals and are found guilty or not guilty. If we are to survey the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act 1990, this should be a very, very clear-cut case. We should be found not guilty, and the charges dismissed. Now, that in a normal, dare I say, normal, sensible, functioning society like New Zealand was meant to have been, that would be something very, very, that should be something that you could put out there and say, well, it's likely to be like that. But we can't say that. We cannot say that in this instance. We are living in the Soviet Republic of New Zealand. There's no doubt about that. One of the articles I want to talk to our listeners about today actually confirms just how bad things are in New Zealand. And with our current Prime Minister and her communist government. But the problem is, and I had a conversation with someone this morning, next year we have the general elections of 2023, and we've got the choices bad or really bad or really bad and bad. And so they aren't choices. It makes a mockery of so-called the democratic platform or democracy. And we've really got our only other option is the leader of the opposition, so-called. And he is, of course, a former recipient within the last 3 years of the Bill and Melinda Gates Businessman of the Year Award.
Wait, hold on a second. Are you talking about Christopher Luxon, the new National Party guy?
Christopher Luxon is a recipient of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation Businessman of the Year. And that apparently that same year that he did that, that he received that, he also was acting at the time as Jacinda Ardern, our current Prime Minister, acting as her chief business advisor. So if this isn't a stitch up or a fix up, then you know what is. But anyway, in terms of our case this week, I mean, really, it should be very, very straightforward. There should be no ambiguity about it. It should be a case of, you know, let's break out the champagne, and because we know already that we're going to win this case because the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act protects us and guarantees our right to peaceful assembly and expression of thought and of religion and of freedom of speech, etc. But the mere fact that we are 15, 16 months later still dealing with this underlies a very, very, very big problem that we have in our country, and that is we are no longer a functioning democracy. We are a regime-led country. So who knows what we're going to get this week, mate. In the words of one wise Forrest Gump, life is like a box of chocolates, and we won't know until we get there and open the box.
Mm-mm. I do believe the box of chocolates analogy, you know, you don't know what you're going to get, but you know that it's actually going to be sweet. The problem is that life is not like a box of chocolates. It's like one of those, you know, those joke games where they have all different kinds of strange flavored jelly beans, and some of them are like caterpillar or centipede, you know, like horrible tasting jelly beans that you could like unwittingly just put in your mouth and somebody could laugh at you. That's kind of more what life is like, I think.
Yeah, it can be a little bit like that.
That was actually quite hilarious. A lot of the videos that came out about me, you know, they took my little Spartan speech or whatever from the start of the thing, which I was just doing as a joke, and then interspersed it with me going to the pub protesters, please protect me, we will stand against you, please protect me, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had even when you're being kicked in the ribs when you're down. I think it's one of these things where you try to take a stand for everybody, okay, and you get a lot of support from people, and that's another thing we need to acknowledge, is that the huge amount of support that came in right after the arrest, when we couldn't, you know, talk to anybody and what have you, you know, that was really like the most I've ever seen personally in my life. And that was all due to the listeners sharing and having their concern and stuff. You know, a lot of people got depressed when we got arrested, you know, for some of them for weeks, you know, because it was in the middle of lockdown and there was no Billy TK and no Vinnie Eastwood shows to get them through the darkness, you know. And that was something that was really important that was taken from us at that time. And people don't understand the calculation, you know. Like, I've had three people tell me that if it wasn't for my show, they would have committed suicide, you know, for over the years and stuff like that. And the rule in talk radio is that if somebody calls in and says something, there's 1,000 other people who thought the same thing but didn't call in.
Yeah, and that's the truth of it, because really at the end of the day, we've literally been counsellors for a lot of people that have been very, very seriously affected by the New Zealand government over these almost 3 years. I mean, I'm a pastor of a ministry, House of the Lord Ministries, but even before then, and in that role I counsel lots of people, but even before then, beginning in the entry into the freedom movement, I found myself a counsellor to many thousands of New Zealanders, and hearing their pain, their suffering, their stress, their anger, was pretty hard to deal with at times. And you know, you're quite right. You know, I found myself, along with yourself, unable to access the internet and unable to help people. So it was a very distressing time period for a lot of people that couldn't have access to our voice. And it was, of course, it's stressful for us too. But I think this week will determine whether we have any semblance of a free society left in New Zealand. If we are found guilty and punished in any way, Vinnie, then really that's the end of New Zealand as we once knew it. And I think the chilling effect that you talked about earlier, I think that's exactly what will happen. I think New Zealanders will see the writing on the wall. But you know, the flip side to all of this is that it can be stopped. People just have to decide to stop it, and that's about it, really. That's about as easy as you can put it. Now, excuse me one second, I'm just going to put my laptop in. Excuse me one second.
Sure. It is one of those difficulties when you're dealing with the truth proper, like large scale and stuff like that. And Billy's the only person who actually came up in politics in this country and talked about all of the issues. And he was the only a major figure in the truth movement who did, again, talk about all of the issues and that kind of thing. So there's something very, very special that people missed out on when he was down for the count after our bail conditions and things of that nature. We had to go into court 4 times, I think, over a period of 6 weeks in order to get my internet back at least. And for somebody who literally makes their entire income online, that is something that's so brutal. You know, they could have just said no social media. You know, I couldn't even access my internet banking. You know, I couldn't even touch my computers and stuff. I was afraid, you know, if we were walking into the lounge or something, that if I saw something on Netflix that my wife was watching, I might be in violation of a bail conditions. You know, it was just like crazy. And you had to reply from emails for the court by law, but if you access the internet, you violate your bail conditions, and so you go to jail. So I was sitting there going, Do I want to violate my bail conditions so that I can get an email from these people, which is a bail condition to not get, right? So it was one of those sort of crazy sort of things that happened during this whole debacle. And the costs financially on myself and Billy in particular have been absolutely enormous. Like, this is two guys arrested at a protest. You know, what's the big deal? The big deal is the lockdowns were unlawful. Okay? We're right. They're wrong. We're in the right. They're in the wrong. That's why they're making such a big deal about it. That's why they're making such examples over us, because they found out that if people get told by an authority figure that 90% of them will probably just do it, but occasionally there are those who resist. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on Republic Broadcasting Network, and we'll be right back after the break.
RBN is offering a limited offer.
Skin. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you very much, guys, for tuning in. My very special guest joining me is, I guess who could at one point have been considered the single most influential figure of the New Zealand Truth Movement in the year 2020, when we had an election against our current Prime Minister, Jizzy. Billy, are you there?
I'm there. I'm just listening to the sound of a memory, really, and that's quite true. You know, 2020, during the election period, the last election period, was unbelievable. I mean, if we think that through, I went from complete sort of, certainly political obscurity, to 2 months later being at the head of the largest freedom movement in New Zealand history and the fastest growing freedoms and civil liberties focused political party in history, to being voted the third preferred prime minister, all within 2 months of speaking out against the great harm that I could see coming down the pipeline at us by a globalistic techno-fascist communist regime. And let us be perfectly clear, there's no difference whether you vote the devil in pink or the devil in blue. Both sides of the house are equally captured. It's about the system. And, you know, the very things that we were warning people about in 2020, Vinny, and you were sitting right there beside me because we took you on board as one of our media partners, you know, all those things that we were called conspiracy nut job, conspiracy theorists, or are now with us today, and it's a fact of everyday life. Now, we do have
government. There is one thing you do not want to hear from a conspiracy theorist. I told you so.
Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, the fact is, you know, we did tell them so. And, you know, you know, New Zealand's had to really wear that. I mean, you know, the amount of people, like I've got articles of from, you know, mainstream media where they've said that Billy Tekahika is a conspiracy nut job because he says there's going to be no jab, no job policies introduced and mandates. And, you know, of course, that we've now, that's old news now. But in 2020, it wasn't. It was all assessment and projection saying this is what they're going to do. And also, you know, our stance that the lockdowns were going to cause massive, massive harm, and which they could not justify for a flu equivalent virus that had a 99.97% chance of survivability for most people on the planet, on God's earth. And, you know, and that the harm that was being caused by the lockdowns far outweighed any pretended benefit that they were trying to sell. And so, you know, but now it's all out now. Now it's all out. You know, there are no jab, no job policies. There is, you know, a two-tier class system now where you're jabbed and you're unjabbed, and the unjabbed are second-class citizens. And yes, we are going into communism. We've got cultural Marxism. I'm Maori and Indigenous New Zealander, and yet, you know, they've hijacked even the Indigenous culture to try and substantiate and endorse the globalist program through the United Nations of the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which is a complete scam. It's a sham. They may do some good work here and there, but the general thrust of that particular program is to get Indigenous consensus for the UN agendas, whether it be Agenda 2130, 2030 or 2050, it doesn't matter. But they just want Indigenous support of their program. So how do they do it? They promise the Indigenous communities a crumb of support, promising a loaf just around the corner. That loaf never appears, but in return, it's a given that they will support the UN agenda. And so, you know, 2020 was incredible, and the freedom movement in New Zealand there, Vinny, and I've been talking about this a lot, the freedom movement in New Zealand had a simple purity to it. It really did. It had a simple purity to it. You know, I was completely naive. I just wanted to speak the truth, not my truth, but the truth, and warn people and tell people that you're not a nut job, you're not alone. This is real what we're seeing, and we need to make a stand against it, because if we don't, we're going to lose our country. And now we are dealing with that. We are absolutely dealing with that today. And in the newspaper, or I should say in the media yesterday, out comes this article here. I'm going to read it just quickly. And it says this. It says this. This should give here we go. Some nice music coming over the side there. All right. Yeah. So here is a mainstream...
Well, we're coming into a break. That's why the music's there. Sorry, brother. Okay. We'll have to hold this until just after the break. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in. Go to vinnieeastwood.com and donate today. It's all gone now, 'cause the letter can't take it away. 'Cause we didn't see through tomorrow.
In the summertime, in the city, when the girls are all so pretty. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty, I feel like I'm walking on the clouds. When the sun shines down, in the summer, in the city, when the girls are looking so pretty, with all those nice fresh fruits and vegetables tended by vendors on the side of the street making a living. In the summer, in the city, when the girls are so pretty.
the summertime in the city, ladies and gentlemen. Auckland City, the corporate centre of scumbaggery for New Zealand. And it is quite beautiful when you just look on the surface of things, isn't it? But New Zealand's kind of like the bush, you know, the forest. As soon as you start kicking over a rock or a log or something like that, all these vermin start scuttling out everywhere. You know, it's just not entirely dissimilar. Welcome back, Billy TK, as well. You there?
G'day, g'day. Kia ora. Okay. Yep, certainly am. So I did want to drag your attention back to this article that appeared in the media yesterday. It says this, data centres in New Zealand, the Prime Minister's office rejects Official Information Act request on briefings over plans. Now, to those non-New Zealand listeners, this is the equivalent of a FOIA request, okay, Freedom of Information Act request. So, and New Zealand agencies, government ministries, etc., are meant to oblige those requests, unless it's, of course, huge national security importance, then they may get a waiver themselves for that. But listen to this. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is staying tight-lipped over her dealings with major multinational companies about data centres being built or planned for New Zealand. Now, pay attention. Her office has rejected an Official Information Act request by Radio New Zealand for briefings to Ardern ahead of any meetings with the company's Amazon Web Services, so that's Amazon, Microsoft, DCI, Data Grid, CDC, Lake Parime, Simply Energy, Google Cloud, Salesforce, Catalyst Cloud, CCL, and Datacom. Previously released documents show many of the companies have been strongly lobbying ministers for support. For instance, they show that AWS, which is Amazon Web Services, posed several requests as part of its investment commitment into New Zealand, which puts it at $7.5 billion over 15 years, and had direct contact with the Prime Minister. Radio New Zealand asked for any briefings about energy supply, energy resilience, or government agencies being potential customers of a data centre. Ardern's Chief of Staff replied that briefings existed but would not be released. These briefings are provided to the Prime Minister in confidence to support her in her role as leader of the government and chair of cabinet. Now, that's not a good enough response. So essentially what you have here, and we were talking about this in 2020, where we received a government leak that Microsoft personnel had been allowed into New Zealand and left New Zealand during a lockdown at a time where our borders were closed. And they had come in to discuss the idea of Microsoft. Now, listen to this for frightening. Microsoft to update the New Zealand data cloud infrastructure, meaning that a foreign-owned company, which has no doubt nefarious relationships with proven relationships with the World Economic Forum, who want to connect everybody into the AI grid, and or China, and they want to take over our data infrastructure. Now, we talked about that in 2020, and people going, oh, that's rubbish, you know, more conspiracy theories. But the reality was, and always has been, is that these discussions, which are very, very sensitive, which affect our privacy in New Zealand, these conversations with these data companies were being had and held behind closed doors. Now, we need to know what they are, what the contents of those meetings had in them, what the discussions were about, and what are the ins and outs of the arrangements. Because we've already seen that the Pfizer purchasing agreement for their death vaccines has been a closed door. We can't penetrate into knowing what's in them, but we do know what's in them because other countries have leaked Pfizer purchasing agreements, procurement agreements. And so we know that they're very, very bad. But the problem is, you see, with all of this, is that our Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, she has personal relationships with these people. She has a personal relationship with Bill and Melinda Gates. Now, Bill on one side, Melinda
supposedly on the other side. And what we have is this strange situation where you've got someone who has this relationships or has these relationships who's now having closed door meetings with private companies to discuss things that affect the public and the New Zealand population in a very, very big way, potentially. And so if this doesn't tell us that we are dealing with one of the most corrupt people on the planet, then I don't know what does. What do you think about that?
One moment, please. Okay, yeah, I had to get it unmuted. But do we have one of the most corrupt countries in the world? We knew this in 2011 when we had a former Scotland Yard investigator who'd worked all over the world telling activists like Penny Bright that he's worked in many corrupt countries, but New Zealand is by far the most corrupt. And people go, oh, what are you talking about? Okay, there's different brands of corruption, ladies and gentlemen. Before Penny Bright died, she cottoned onto a technical term called state capture, which is where you get your influence at the policy level by buying off the people who make the laws, right? Compromising them, as it were. And this is the systemic corruption that we have throughout New Zealand. Why did not a single politician come out to talk to the people at the Wellington protests? Because they're on the take, all right? And people got to get with that. People got to take off their rose-colored glasses and just really think for a minute. These people will do just about anything, and you know they will. The only question is whether or not you let them get away with it. So the times that we're ahead are very scary, you know, but fear always gives you a choice. Do you succumb to it, or do you develop some courage? And I think it's long past the time that's due that the men and the women of New Zealand do find their courage and stand up against this oppressive regime, very much personified by the Baby Will case, as happened recently, where I'm sure many will have seen on InfoWars the little baby being taken by police and hospital staff off of their parents who wanted unjabbed blood for their little baby's heart condition. Really kind of terrible. I spoke to the cameraman last night who was there. He gave me the full background story of it. And quite harrowing. He's still kind of like shaking a little bit from the encounter, as it were. So this thing is, if they will take your children, if they will perform medical experiments on them without your consent, what rights have you got? Okay, really? Just think for a moment. What rights do you actually have if they can do something like that? And the question I've got really got to kind of have on my mind and a lot of other people's, really, if they're kind of wanting to get answers to these situations, is at what point and in what form do we fight back? Okay, because we're being assaulted, basically. Left, right, and center, doesn't matter which spectrum of the political bird you're on, they're all compromised. And what are we going to do about it? All right, a bully is coming up at you and he's punching you in the little chest and saying, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? All right, that's what it feels like. And you have the choice to submit or to find some courage.
Well, that's what it's about, really. It's either you stand up and take a position against it, or you roll over in the fetal position, suck your thumb, and pretend it's not happening. That's really, those are the options. There's even another article in the paper today, or in the media today, that says it's reporting on a report by the Ombudsman Chief Justice Peter Boshier, who's looking at the managed isolation quarantine, aka the detention centres of people that were coming in from into New Zealand that were forced into isolation in motels and hotels across New Zealand, and he's saying that they acted unreasonably over the managed isolation quarantine advice. So what we're seeing here is the revelation that the advice that these politicians were being given by corrupt bureaucrats, giving it to corrupt advice to corrupt politicians, and what you have is the crumbling of the narrative. You know, everybody's getting ready to jump ship, and they've been jumping ship saying lockdowns never saved anybody, we're never going to work, the vaccine doesn't work, it doesn't protect you, won't stop you from being infectious. So that's a lie, that's crumbled. It's not safe, it's killed hundreds and hundreds of New Zealanders, damaged many, many thousands. So we know that the safety aspect is a lie. And we know that that the decisions they made have, in my view, irreparably destroyed our economy. And so, you know, what it comes down to really, in my mind, is they're worried about you and I having a little 80-person protest that was peaceful and beautiful and in an empty city, because that's what it was. We were in an empty mainstream New Zealand city that was absolutely deserted. And you know, they're making a big deal of us, and yet we've got these people that have made these decisions that have blinking killed literally thousands of New Zealanders. Who's going to be held accountable for that? I mean, the fact is, we are now staring down the barrel of a Great Depression that'll make the original 1929 Great Depression look like child's play.
Just to put, you know, that in perspective, just for a second, I found an interesting statistic during the Depression is that 10% of the population starved to death at a time when 90% of them lived in rural areas and grew their own food. Today, 90% of people live in cities and do not have the ability to grow their own food. So you want to have a Great Depression, do you, ladies and gentlemen? Watch what happens. The most dangerous thing in the world is a man with hungry kids.
Yeah, it's happening. It certainly is happening. And the problem is that, as you say, many, many people are going to be caught unawares, unprepared, and in big, big trouble because they haven't prepared, they haven't got haven't got themselves in a place where they can provide their own food. And that's a serious issue. And that's why when you examine the flow-down effect of the Ukrainian war and you see the decisions that have been made around that, they don't make sense at all. I know, let's go and put sanctions on Russia that will hurt our own people and destroy businesses and economies. Let's go and do that. How is that smart?
I mean, it's not ideal in terms of, you know, what you actually want to accomplish. However, the thing is, smart. I walked past an ATM the other day in the mall and it said smart ATM. And I go, what makes it so smart? Because whenever you look at the works of people who are actually investigating into AI and the technocratic control grid, Technocracy Now by Patrick Wood, or Spy Chips by Dr. Catherine Albrecht, reality is quite clear. You're not going to have governing politicians, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to have robots and programs and apps and things of that nature that are going to run your frickin' life. You know, somebody was saying the other day that they're trying to put in a measure where you can't live or you can't go more than a 20-minute walk from where you live, right? This is a kind of a grid-down system. You won't be able to go into unauthorized zones and things of that nature. It's already here, they're just having trouble implementing it, because there's a lot of people who still have this thing called, what was it again? Starts with an F, rhymes with freedom. Freedom, yes. And the thing about it is people have forgotten largely that the whole reason why you have freedom is because of eternal vigilance. People didn't just sit back on a lawn chair when it was sunny and take it easy while the enemy was still hatching their schemes.
Yep, exactly. And it's not going to stop until it reaches what they would consider maturity. And I had this conversation this morning with a good dear friend of mine who came around, and we were talking about this very thing, and he says, well, you know, where is this heading to, Billy? And I said, well, and we were talking about the COVID issue, and I said, well, climate change is coming. I've been speaking about it for a long, long time now, saying that climate change would be the one thing that will aggregate all of these different control measures into one sort of agenda, or one sort of mechanism that will bring about the agenda. And climate change is perfect. It's a global extinction level event. It's got everything in it. It's got, you know, virtue signaling. It's got, you know, the threat of global death, all those things, none of which are proven, by the way. And it's got all these, you know, sort of virtue signaling, woke culture, lefty, socialist, globalist, whatever you want to call them, advocates that are pushing for it, including, of course, the EU, the UN, COP, IP, the Intergovernment Panel for Climate Change, IPCC, but also, of course, the Vatican is pushing it like mad. And that, of course, is what, you know, the Bible says is going to happen. The beast system, which is the Vatican system, and all its minions, which are called the harlots, will work in uniform together to bring about a system that, unless you obey it, you will not be able to buy or sell, hence your central bank digital currencies, which are in New Zealand, are ready to go. People don't realize, in fact, that's a good point, people do not realize how far ahead of the rest of the world we are in the plan of tyranny here in New Zealand. We are truly, everyone looks at Trudeau and go, oh, he's a really bad guy, and you know, you can marry a tree or your goat in Canada and all those other things he's doing. But we are far beyond that. We are way beyond that. We are far more sophisticated and mature in this program than what people actually think. I mean, look at Ardern, Prime Minister Ardern. You know, every second chance she gets, you get in a photo of her with another globalist. I mean, recently at the Asian summit, you've got a photo of her walking like a little puppy dog beside Klaus Schwab. You know, she's a World Economic Forum young leader, global young leader.
I believe that would make her a Schwab hound.
Oh, man, I tell you, Schwab hound, yeah, exactly. And, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates, she's friends with the Moore, Hillary Clinton, you know, all of these, you know, megalomaniac nut jobs, she's friends with them. She's groomed by them. She's the former president of the International Union of Socialist Youth, which is a communist incubator. And she is getting ready to get booted out of parliament next year, and she's going to be laughing down the steps of parliament as she drives out, because her future is sure.
Didn't she have like program.
She's in the team.
She had like a net worth of 200k before she became prime minister, and the prime ministership pays like, what is it, less than 400,000 a year? And yep. After four or five, well, how many years is it now? Five, 6 years, or something. Years. She's worth like over 25 million, I think.
Yeah, she's worth a few million now. I'm not quite sure of the figure. And what we don't want to do is be so foolish to say that her worth would be declarable right now. It wouldn't be. So when people say she's worth 25 million, prove it, because I haven't seen it yet. She's definitely worth a few million now. How does that happen? Now, I've seen figures around the 3 million mark still. How does that happen?
Well, my brother was telling me
for the last
My brother was telling me about there's like different kinds of influence and different kind of value that people bring to the table. So, for example, you may not be worth $1 million, but you know all of these millionaires who can give you the millionaire lifestyle and stuff like that, ostensibly for free or something like that. People have got all these kind of different resources, and that's what a prime minister really is for international technocratic bankers. They want that resource. Especially in a country like New Zealand, former British banking colony, has more money laundering going on than Davy Crockett had for, you know, like, bro, this is this is the river of filth, this thing, which reminds me, we need to also give a wee plug to the River of Lies documentary as well. You go to riveroflies.co.nz. Is it .co.nz?
It is .co.nz, and I just want to explain to people, that's a good segue, mate, is that this documentary is called The River of Lies, the New Zealand Scandemic Investigative Documentary, and it is going to be a two-part documentary. We're going back into filming this week. We had a week off while we reset, and it's amazing already. So it's broken down into two parts. If people want to know about it and look at trailers and to help us fund this blinking thing, please go to www.riveroflies.co.nz. Let me say that again, riveroflies.co.nz, .co.nz. I'm speaking like an American. And this is going to be amazing. We have got a two-part documentary, mini-series. Part one is where we take 10 claims made by the New Zealand government about COVID-19. Now, the interesting thing about these 10 claims is that they echo around the world. They're the same grouping of claims and same type of claims that Canada's made, UK, of course, the US, Australia, all around the world, about COVID-19, about the injection, about people who challenge the narrative. So we've identified 10 basic claims, and we are going to debunk them. But how we do that is most critically important, because how we peel this back and dissect, pull apart, and forensically examine these claims is going to be the difference between being able to wake people up and not, to be able to give people a good education opportunity.
Well, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we've got time for today. You are listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and thank you very much for doing so. We will see you again sometime, assuredly, right here on Republic Broadcasting.